Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Dr. Brent Jones is the superintendent of Seattle Public Schools. He's dedicated to making sure all students thrive by transforming organizational culture and redesigning pre-K through 12 systems and supports. As the former Seattle Public Schools Chief Equity, Partnerships, and Engagement Officer, he developed the district's strategy for eliminating opportunity gaps and roadmap for realizing racial equity for students and families. He has served in executive roles with MLK King County, Seattle Public Schools, Kent School District, Seattle Colleges, and Green River College. As superintendent, Dr. Jones's vision is to ensure every student experiences high-quality instructional time and intellectually ambitious curriculum, ample opportunities to develop their self-identity, highly favorable and welcoming conditions, and exceeding standards and completion of college prep and rigorous courses. Dr. Jones has deep community roots and is a proud product of Seattle Public Schools and the University of Washington. He has earned master's and PhD degrees in education administration from the University of Texas at Austin. He enjoys spending time with family, working out, making creative projects, and doing random acts of kindness. Dr. Jones, as the 2022-23 school year begins, what are your priorities for Seattle Public Schools, and how will you measure success?
Sure, and thank you for allowing me to spend time with you today talking about one of my favorite topics, Seattle Public Schools. We can measure success in many ways. We have what's called multiple measures of success. We have assessments, we have diagnostics, we have testimonials, we have narratives. But the highest level of success is when a family understands that their student has made it through Seattle Public Schools and they've defined success for themselves. We have a new governance structure called student outcome focused governance. And this is where we're making sure that we're focused on student outcomes and we're really aligning adult behaviors to support those student outcomes. And so these are expressed in what we're calling goals and guardrails. We have universal outcomes that we're expecting for all students. And then we have targeted outcomes that we're expecting for students that haven't yet met the standard. And so we do this by really focusing on targeted universalism.
Yeah.
So we target the students that the system has not worked for consistently and predictably, and we try to change our behaviors as adults and as a system to ensure that those students are getting the services and the supports that they need. Mm-hmm. We take what we learn from those services and we apply those universally. And so once all of our students are meeting the standard that we set and their families set for them, then we know that we've had success. It's important that we measure the success. Our board holds me accountable to goals, and we have three specific goals. Those specific goals are around third grade reading, seventh grade math, and college and career readiness. They measure these goals every other month through progress monitoring, where yours truly is actually talking about the strategies and the status and updating the board on what progress we're actually making toward those goals. And so the board holds me accountable to that progress, and the superintendent's evaluation is based on that progress. By all accounts, if we meet those goals, those really ambitious goals that we've had clear success.
When it comes to college and career readiness, that's not the same as, say, reading scores in third grade or seventh grade math scores. How do you measure college and career readiness?
So college and career readiness, I have a concept that I've talked about over time is around being Seattle ready. And that's being competitive in your chosen field. That's being a great citizen and enjoying providing service to others. Lastly, really having a self-identity and being clear with who you are and what you're all about. And so through that process, there are also tangible measures regarding making sure our students take advanced learning courses, making sure our students have credits that they earn towards graduation. Those are all measurable. Those are all empirical data that can support that. But we really want our students to finish and matriculate through Seattle Public Schools and be Seattle ready, that they can live in this city and thrive and feel like they're part of the fabric of the city of Seattle and King County and really global citizens, and that they're prepared to be competitive, have a livable wage in this city.
In terms of the targeted universalism, which I totally understand, and I appreciate the African-American Male Achievement Program that you have, for example, how do you close opportunity gaps in addition to targeted universalism? Is there something else you're using, like, for example, multi-tiered systems of support?
Yes, indeed. My job as a superintendent is to create the conditions for students to thrive. In order to do that, we also have to create welcoming environments. We have to create environments where students feel safe and they feel like they have a sense of belonging. Those are all foundational to us being able to make sure that students are successful. We know that over time, some of our populations, particularly African American males, have not felt like they had a sense of belonging. That is foundational for our students to be able to have academic success. We believe that is not the end, but a means to make sure that our students can participate in high quality instruction. We also understand that measures such as coursework completion, attendance, being able to participate in a classroom are really important to make sure that students have access to high quality instruction. And if they don't have access to high quality instruction, they're missing quality instructional time. So by definition, they're not thriving. The African American Male Advancement Program office that we have looks at the whole child, looks at the whole context for how students are matriculating through Seattle Public Schools. And they put into place many innovative practices in order to make sure that African American students thrive. And if we take what we learn from those students as they thrive, and again, we try to apply that universally so that the old saying that all boats will rise.
Yeah. Mind if I ask what some of those innovative practices are? Because I think that's something that other districts might be interested in.
Sure. We know that one of the key practices is family engagement. We know that families are the first teacher for students. When we talk about family engagement, we want to make sure that families are equipped with information that's relevant and that's timely, that's consistent, so that they can support their students in not just homework, but just really how to walk through the pathways to get from pre-K all the way through graduation. And so when we equip families in ways that it's meaningful for them, that it's in language that's clear, provide them that clarity for them to move forward, then they can supplement what teachers are doing in the classroom. They can supplement what the school leaders are doing to try to, again, create the conditions for them to thrive. And so family engagement is key. I talked a little bit about welcoming environments. I talked a little bit about identity safety. So part of what we have when we talk about the African American male experience is a lack of identity safety sometimes. And so we really try to work hard to provide programming, to provide curriculum, to provide experiences before school, after school, during school, where they can see themselves reflected in the curriculum, where they can see themselves reflected in the lesson planning. Another avenue for African American male achievement is really to have a diverse workforce at the teacher level, at the IA level, at the leadership level, so they can see reflections of themselves in those who are providing services and that are supporting them. So family engagement, trying to create a welcoming environment, a sense of belonging, diverse workforce are ways that we're walking through this process of making sure African American males thrive.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from African American male students so far?
Our African American male students, we know that their graduation rates are increasing. Mm-hmm. We know that they're starting to feel much more of a sense of belonging. As we look at climate scores and we start to look at the test scores, we see those creeping up. The outcomes are starting to be there, but where we want to be, we have a gap to get there. But I think our African American male students are really experiencing great programs, programs like the Kingmakers, other programming that we have where they're receiving mentoring, where they're receiving coaching, where they're really just immersed in an environment that is wrapping a lot of support around them, so that we're looking at the, as I mentioned, the whole child and not just one-off aspects of their existence. So the African-American experience is we're learning a lot, and we've been focused for the last 3 years specifically with goals and outcomes for African-American males. They're starting to see some fruits of our collective labor.
Well, as you know, last year was a tough year for students. Mm-hmm. For students, for families, for educators. How will the district support student mental health and meet students where they are in a meaningful way when it comes to their mental health needs?
So we certainly recognize over the last 2 years, and it's not just been the last 2 years, but the last 2 years have been acute, and they've really revealed some of the opportunities for us to have some foundational practices that really support students' mental health and their growth and their development. We've done diagnostic work to see where our students are, and we've responded by bringing more social workers in, more psychologists, more people who are involved with mental health to really not just help the students, but help the adults that are helping the students as well. We have a strong team that works through trauma-informed practices. We have a coordinated school health team that is deployed to schools on a regular basis to really find the hot spots and to be proactive about providing supports for not just students again, but staff. We've experienced a lot this last year. It's been really helpful that we have legislation, for example, that's helping us to shore up that need, but it's still a great need for us to really have comprehensive services for all of our students and all of our staff that need that support.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you about that legislation. It's House Bill 1664. Mm-hmm. How will you be implementing that bill here in Seattle?
Well, I want to say thank you to everyone who's helped push through that House Bill 1664. Ideally, we'd have better ratios of counselors, of nurses, of social workers, of psychologists. We've identified the need, and sometimes we have to just recognize the need, and then we have legislation that supports that need. We've intentionally at Seattle Public Schools have spent money through our ESSER dollars and through our existing budget to bring more mental health professionals forward to support our students. Bills like House Bill 1664 have been tremendous to help us to really solidify the robust services that we want to continue to provide for our students.
So in terms of your own personal education journey, how did you get to where you are, and what worked and what didn't work so well?
I've been on an educational journey ever since I can remember. I started my educational journey probably in the kindergarten class of, I won't say the year, I went to Harrison Elementary School, which later became Martin Luther King Elementary School, where I had the fortune to be led by a principal by the name of Louise McKinney. And Louise McKinney happened to be the wife of Pastor Samuel Barry McKinney. And why that's relevant is because they were part of the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And Mount Zion Baptist Church was one of the first churches in the city that was focused on liberation through the gospel. And that really was one that thrust me into a place where I knew that I was destined to do some things that were good. So I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to be successful. Mm-hmm. Throughout my entire career, first grade through second grade at Martin Luther King Elementary School, Louise McKinney had high expectations. We had high quality instruction in the classroom. And the only reason I knew this is because my mother was a teacher.
Ah.
And so she was intentional about making sure I had access to high quality instruction. That's the same thing I want to do for all of our students here at Seattle Public Schools. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, I went on to John Muir Elementary School, and then I went on to be one of the first desegregation classes in 1977. Where some of us in the south end of Seattle were bused to the north end of Seattle. Mm-hmm. Great experience. I think some of the adults had a challenge with it, but us students, we just adapted to the change and we learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 98118 area code, which most people know that's one of the diverse, it might be still the most diverse area code in the city of Seattle, and not only in the city of Seattle, but maybe even in the nation. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from that experience by having a diverse set of friends, a diverse set of experiences, and that helped me grow into the person I am today. I later went on to Franklin High School, and then subsequently I went on to University of Washington, where I studied science, and then I became later a science teacher. And so I've been in education for most of my career, and then I've held various administrative roles throughout the last 25 years of my leadership journey. I wound up through all those experiences, being the superintendent of Seattle Public Schools, coming back home to a place that raised me and helped me grow into the person I am today.
Mm-hmm. That sounds fantastic, having the supports that you had. Was there anything that you wish would have been different or anything that you could have changed along the way had you had the power to do so?
Yes, I believe that there were opportunities for higher expectations for not just me, but my colleagues. Mm-hmm. There were opportunities for teachers and adults to believe in us that were missed. I look back on my educational experience, and I happen to have a tremendous extended family, a tremendous support network of folks that helped me get through. But some of my colleagues, some of my best friends that I grew up with, that were more intellectual than I was, that were sharper than I was, more creative and innovative than I was, sometimes slipped through the cracks. And I think part of that was around the lack of having high expectations. Yeah. However, my educational journey yielded, I think, a pretty good product in me at the end of the day, because I had teachers that cared. I had school leaders that cared. I had a community that cared. Seattle was a great place to grow up in, and subsequently I went to Austin, Texas, had a really good experience in graduate school later on in my career as well. So I think the main thing that I would change is to make sure that we maintain some high expectations for students and provide them the requisite supports for them to be able to thrive and not just meet a standard of graduation, but meet a standard of thriving and being wildly successful.
If you were in charge of the entire state's education system, and not just Seattle Public Schools, but if you were in charge of the entire state and there were no budgetary constraints, what would you do to implement those higher expectations, to have those supports for students who need them?
Well, this will be a very boring answer, but I would like for school districts to be able to focus on teaching and learning. Mm. There's so many different things that we need to focus on that we learned over this last year. For example, we had to become public health experts. We had to be able to try to help with food insecurity. We had to look at how do we support public safety. Those are all tremendously important items, but they're not necessarily focused on teaching and learning and high quality instruction in the classroom. So if I was the head of the state and budget was no problem, I'd have lots of support personnel, counselors, psychologists, and a whole host of mental health experts to really help us to shore up students so that they were feeling great about themselves and they had access to a bunch of adults that cared about them. So that's really what I like to see. Mitigate the distractions so that teachers can focus on teaching and learning, so that school leaders can focus on supporting teachers, and that the district offices can focus on mitigating the distractions from school so that they can focus on high quality learning.
Dr. Brent Jones is superintendent of Seattle Public Schools. Dr. Jones, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate everything that you all are doing to support public education.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to learn more about League of Education Voters or support our work, please visit our website, educationvoters.org.